Welcome to LTN Rewind, where we take a deep dive into the archives of the Love Thy Nerd podcast network. Today, we're taking you all the way back to the beginning of the Pull List podcast with Chris Poirier and Hector Mire. This is their first unofficial episode of the podcast where they talk about all things comics, pop culture, faith, and how it all intersects in the nerd culture at large. Specifically, they'll be talking about Batman number 53, which is the subject of Batman's beliefs, which many feel writer Tom King revealed as atheism. While Tom King may not agree with that assessment, many readers and critics weighed in on the uproar. And now, Chris and Hector do their best to parse out the meaningful discussions.
You are listening to the Pull List Podcast with Chris Poirier and Hector Mirai, part of the Love Thy Nerd Podcast Network.
Oh, it feels so good!
Better put the word out. Get ready for the nerd out. Better put specs.
Hey, everybody. You are listening to the Pull List Podcast, a part of the Love Thy Nerd Podcast Network. My name is Chris Poirier, and joining me today is my partner in crime, Hector Mirai. Say hi, Hector.
Hi, everyone.
And we just want to bring you this first installment of the Pull List Podcast, where we are going to talk about comics, pop culture, and faith, and how all of those things interact. Just to give you a little idea of who we are, we want to give you folks an idea of where we come from and what we're about. So Hector, how about you give us a quick idea of who you are and why you're here?
So I am a longtime comic book nerd and also advocate of faith and Christianity and all Jesus-y things. I'm a pastor from Lumberton, North Carolina, but I also write a book series called Faith and Fandom, and I tour that around Comic-Cons in the Southeast. I'm also a former screenwriter for Clever Movies and Screen Junkies.
Which is great, and it's actually how I met Hector in the first place. I actually manage a comic book store here in Cary, North Carolina called Ultimate Comics, but I actually met Hector during a convention here in Raleigh while I was attending seminary, because I was trying to figure out what I was going to do post-seminary, and I met Hector and saw what he does with Faith and Fandom and went, wow, there's something between these things. And then, of course, we met the folks with Love Thy Nerd, and just all the pieces kind of came together. So I literally work in comics every day through the store, and also am a staff member with the North Carolina Comic-Con. So I do things for them as well. So kind of just soaking in all this nerdy goodness that we wanted to be able to get together and talk about the things that we see uniquely through our day jobs, and also just how that interacts with our faith and how it interacts with culture just in general. So we just want to be able to share our lives and the things that we find interesting throughout our day. So Hector, what are you reading this week? What's on your poll?
Okay. This week was kind of a soft week to me.
It was.
For comics. And the only two things I actually picked up this week specifically were the Batman King of Fear and the Damage Annual. From both of those are from DC. As you'll hear, I'm more of a DC reader than Marvel. I'm not against Marvel. I'm just waiting for better things.
Right. I guess we're going to have to stop the podcast now because we can't have such division. No, I'm kidding. I'm kind of the same right now. So I feel you, but go ahead. What else you got going on?
Those are the two specifically from this week. In general, beyond that, my broader pull list is Red Hood and the Outlaws, Tom King's Batman, also reading the current Justice League arc, the one that's just up to issue 6, Domino from Marvel, Plastic Man from DC, and I'm back and forth on the current Venom run. I want to invest in it, but I also don't. Red Hood and the Outlaws, My Hero Academia, Daredevil, and Unnatural are some of the ones that I'm currently reading, and The Walking Dead just never goes away. So that's my broad list.
No, that's fair. What would you say is your favorite read off from those right now?
In general, Tom King's Batman is my steady favorite. And, you know, we're going to talk about that a little bit more today. But yes. Beyond that, I've really, really, really enjoyed Red Hood and the Outlaws, this current run. They're up to issue 25. And I can honestly say, like, the first, I'd say 18 out of those 25 were great, which is a pretty strong number for a 25-issue run of comics. And My just concern is, though, that they're about to take a hard turn about the direction of the book, the feel of the book. The best part of the book to me has been, I feel like they finally got the formula right for a Jason Todd group. Before with a, you know, Jason was previously in an Outlaws group that consisted of a Red Arrow and, Starfire, former Teen Titans. And it just, I always felt like it was the wrong mashup. I felt like it was the wrong team, and that Starfire was extremely poorly used as a character. But in this last 25 issues, the team dynamic has been a Bizarro Superman, you know, a clone of Superman,
right?
And yeah. Artemis, a basically outcast Amazon. So I thought it was just really a nice effect that they made a mirror, a dark trilogy, a dark trinity of DC outcasts, a dark Superman, a dark Batman, and a dark Wonder Woman. And just watching their team dynamic has been outstanding, and it's kind of been heartwarming. And in the last couple issues, they've torn everything apart. And now Jason Todd is about to come back looking like a Mortal Kombat extra. And the cover art, you know, he's got the scorpion mask, a red hood, obviously it's his name, but, you know, like sword placements on his back where he's carrying a katana and a crowbar. And I'm just like, okay, you know, I'm going to read this. It's one of those deals that you have to be really bad for me to not read a Jason Todd comic book, because he's one of my top three favorite fictional characters. And I think I've read everything Jason Todd except the Red Hood and the Arsenal run when it was just those two, because I'm like, I can't deal with y'all. So I'd say that's kind of my favorite. But then, you know, Gail Simone's books of Plastic Man and Domino are both kind of a joy to read each month. So those are my bigs. I pretty much decided this week, though, that after buying the annual for Damage, that I'm gonna let Damage go. I've tried really hard. If you're unfamiliar, Damage is one of the new DC characters introduced over the last year, that is supposed to be like the new class of heroes. And he's basically a cross between Our Man and the Incredible Hulk. He's a character that has immeasurable strength and potential for 1 hour, and the entire time it's an internal struggle within himself. And it's been solid, but I feel like they're beating a dead horse in the pace of their storytelling. And at this point, something else should have happened. And how are you releasing an annual and you've had this few issues? So I'm like, y'all need to step your game up. But that's kind of where I'm at. So what about you? What's currently turning your pages?
Well, I'll tell you what, the life of a comic book store manager may seem like this absolutely amazing goal for so many folks in the industry, but the realities of being in shop every single day means that sometimes I fall a little behind. And I find myself in that circumstance right now that I'm not sure. I've looked in my poll this week to see what's there. And I came to the same conclusion that this week seemed like it was a little slow, and that sometimes happens usually in the third and fourth week of a month, that things will kind of plateau off to set up for the beginning of a new month. But primarily my poll typically is a smattering of everything, because the joys of being in shop is I need to know a little bit at least of everything or have some idea. But specifically, I'm the same that Tom King's run on Batman is very much towards the front of my list, and that's why we're going to talk about that today. But also Tom King's run, Mr. Miracle, that maxi that they're running 1 through 12 has just been so good. And
it's easily one of the best things I've read.
No, and everything down to the art telling as much story as the narrative that's taking place, that so much is being communicated in that book visually as it is through reading the story, that's just been a blast to read. I'm thoroughly enjoying Doomsday Clock, which is currently the successor, if you will, to Alan Moore's original Watchmen series, but even more specifically, is taking the Watchmen and pulling them into the DC universe proper. So for folks that might not know a whole lot, the Watchmen was told as an isolated story. It didn't take place in the same part of DC's universe where Wonder Woman, Batman, all the regular characters took place in. And Alan did that on purpose. But as part of Rebirth, which has been going on for about 2 years now, which
well, is he did it on purpose, but like, yes, oh, one yeah. of my favorite things about the trivia of it is that it wasn't originally supposed to be that.
Right.
Originally, it was supposed to be canon characters, that the question was Rorschach's role.
There was a lot of different pieces. And then, yeah, they just, like you said, they ended up on that different island. And then historically, Alan Moore also doesn't like to have his stories changed or added to. So this kind of just became a thing. But I think the most fun part about it so far is Geoff Johns, who is currently writing it, is clearly a Watchmen fan and has done such a great job that this has been a love letter, is what I consider it, to the Watchmen universe. And I know you and I have talked offline before in other conversations that he even introduces new characters that feel like they just belong, like they've always been there, and that they just move along, introduce these new characters and give us part of the story that we haven't had before.
Yeah. Mime and Marionette are gold.
Are great. Yep. I'm also reading Unnatural, which is a fascinating book from Image that actually was it's one of those be careful, be warned, listeners, that it's a sensitive topic, but at the same time there's lots of neat things going on in this book. It was originally done in an Italian market, so in Italy, and then was brought over to the US, and it tells a story of oppressive government and kind of what that pushback against societal and cultural norms would feel like for folks. So there's a lot of mature themes in the book, but it's tackling very interesting and very relevant stuff right now. And then I think I'm also what's really good that I'm reading. You've heard me gush before on the Black Hammer stuff, and I have a new Black Hammer book, Age of Doom, sitting in my poll for this week. So that's the book I need to dig out and catch up on. Writer Jeff Lemire has kind of created this dark superhero universe. So it's not your typical Marvel or DC superhero story, but more about the feelings and intricacies of those heroes and what their life is actually like and about outside of the fact that they have really weird, strange superpowers. And Jeff just is great at writing those types of stories. So my pull list can be anywhere from Daredevil to Batman to I'm reading a lot of X-Men titles as well.
Did you pick up this week's current Daredevil? Have you actually read that?
I have it, but I haven't had a chance to read it yet. So I'm looking forward to that because that's one of my more favorite Marvel reads.
I was going to say
Matt Murdock.
It really looked to me like that run from that run that I picked up after the last time I talked to you about the whole deal with the Holy Armor Knights and the troll looking villain. I mean, that was a really enjoyable run, and I know they're shifting gears now, but that's what I'm interested to see what's about to go down with that.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's kind of what I'm reading. I'm also trying to keep up to date with My Hero Academia, so that kind of becomes my other outside reading source as well, and been enjoying the show.
That most recent book was, it felt really slow in the first sections of it, but there comes a point towards the end of it that it's like, you know, just the last section of that book made it a really solid pickup of this most recent one. And that's one of the things I appreciate most about my kids reading a lot of what I read is like, we're currently also watching My Hero Academia, and my kids are like, this isn't in the book. Why are they stalling? And I'm like, well, they're running out of comic books and they've got to throw in some filler episodes here. So.
Yeah. And I was going to say, it's a good part to talk about it just for a moment, is that they've actually even written an article recently that talks about the fact that they're starting to do episodes that are usually what most series would refer to as filler, but they believe that they're providing filler, but also at the same time still trying to progress the story and the characters individually. And I kind of see that, and I've been trying to separate the two mentally, which can be part of that fun challenge of reading something we really enjoy and then seeing it actualized in either a show, a movie, or something. But either way, it's been a really fun process just to kind of look at and see how it, I mean, they're similar teams. It's not unlike in the American market where typically a comic book gets adapted and maybe the original creative team has some input, that in at least a lot of manga, what you see is the creative teams are usually actually pretty similar or the same. So sometimes that's why you see things. I just feel like in a lot of cases that anime just ends up being pretty good, but then we get translation issues, and that's more so where you'll see the differences. Yeah,
the translation issues are kind of present, but you know, I feel like these are better filler episodes than anything you get from like Dragon Ball Z.
that's fair.
Like the filler episodes in Dragon Ball Z, you feel like you're literally being tortured. And then, these episodes, like the one that was this past weekend's actually, you know, it was a filler episode, but
yep,
it was actually a pretty intriguing story. And I feel like that's one that would have actually been a lot harder to pull off on a page. So
yeah, there was a lot of interaction and the relationships of some of the heroes starting to come out as they're going through their exam. So, but yeah, no, this is a lot of what I've been spending my week, my month doing. Obviously being in the store means that I try to pick up pieces as I go, but I think one of the best parts about what we share, Hector, is that we usually try to take a look at a lot of this stuff and apply the lens from our faith background, and from the reality that we both have jobs that we do on the weekend, or we never really, we say weekend, but we're always, ministry never stops people. It's just one of those realities. So you may hear us refer to the weekend, but yeah, ministry is always something that's going on, that a lot of comics and these types of stories tell these stories of struggle, tell stories about humanity, and tell stories about our culture. And that's really what we want to focus on with this show. And to get us started, something recently happened within Tom King's run on Batman, that entire story has just been kind of amazing with lots of ups and downs. And one thing that makes Tom King an excellent writer is his focus on relationships and even internal struggles of characters is something that he just excels at. Right. But we actually want to talk about this episode, Batman issue number 53 specifically. So much was going on. And Hector, how about you kind of set us up for what's been occurring and then where 53 leaves us so we can kind of get into it, because there's a lot to talk about here and we want to try to be into the issues here because we think, I mean, our culture is talking about it. It's not just comic book news, but you might have read Batman's an atheist?
What?
Right?
No. We're currently in a 3-issue arc called Cold Days that jumps off right after the not wedding of Batman and Catwoman, where they made their big advertisement of the wedding issue that didn't happen. And then we jump right into Bruce Wayne and jury duty. And in some of the discussions in the groups I'm involved in, there's been a lot of complaints that these are dragging out, but I'm like, be patient, people. There's a purpose in this. But in essence, Bruce Wayne, Batman, being distraught and heartbroken over the not wedding of his fiance, he goes off his deep end, which is, you know, his MO. He gets heartbroken, he gets darker, and blah, blah, blah. But normally it takes someone else snapping him out of it, but he snaps out of it himself this time and deals with it. But he basically decides that Mr. Freeze is guilty of a crime and beats Mr. Freeze within an inch of his life, to the point that Mr. Freeze confesses to a crime Mr. Freeze did not commit, rather than Batman destroy him. And so feeling the guilt of that and seeing what he's done, Bruce Wayne has bribed his way onto a jury so that he can make sure that Mr. Freeze doesn't end up going down for his temper and his guilt and his anger. And through this process, Bruce Wayne has been using this time 12 Angry Men style to deal with his own personal issues, hangups, and frustrations. And it ended with the I believe this is the climax of the story. It ended with an issue of 53 where most of the mass media started saying that Batman is an atheist, which shows a little lack of integrity on their parts of actually reading. But anyway, that's where we start this off at.
Starting from the beginning, it's an interesting story because Bruce Wayne got jury duty. Not just that he bribed his way in for a specific purpose, but money cannot get you out of jury duty. That's just all we're saying. But apparently it can get you back into it. I think that's the message that Tom was trying to send.
Yeah. I've never actually had jury duty because being a local minister in the area, I'm always doing missional or ministry things. And so the judge in our area, every time I walk up to say something, he's like, oh, never mind, go ahead, and just tells me to leave. So I'm like, I'm pretty sure Bruce Wayne can get out of this, but I know it's nice that I actually chose to come to it.
Right. So I think one of the things that really stood out to me early in this was, like you said, that at first it felt kind of slow. But just knowing how Tom King typically writes his stories, that it's like, nope, there's a very purposeful place he's trying to get us to. And for a 3-issue arc, which is kind of short for a typical comic book run, typically you're looking at 4 to 5 issues is a full story arc, that he got a lot of emotion onto the table of this entire concept of bringing Victor Freeze to justice, but we're seeing the piece of that Batman, like, literally went off the deep end on him. And so we see the issue of, is Batman taking out his emotions because that Mr. Freeze actually killed some people, or is he literally just beating his anger into anything he can get his hands on? And kind of what we see through the story is Bruce is literally working his way through this trial, realizing, having that self-actualization of, he was an easy target for me to wrap my hands around and be able to beat into the ground. And that doesn't necessarily really make things right. Right.
It's that issue of, you know, when you read issue 50 and you're like, I feel bad for whoever is the first person in his path.
Right.
Well, it turned out to be Freeze, obviously, was the first person in the path. And, none of the rogues of Gotham are innocent. If they go to jail, it's not like, you know, that's a heartbreaking issue. But as you go on into the story, you realize that Freeze had been totally chill. He hadn't been committing crimes. He was living up to his parole, all of these things. And that he only armored up and got into this fight because he heard Batman was coming for him. So in realistically, it was self-defense. But
right. And I found that fascinating in this discussion is one thing that a lot of writers typically kind of gloss over when talking about Mr. Freeze as a rogue is we always see, oh, Freeze gun, he's freezing things, he's doing it for nefarious reasons. But most people miss where he came from and what his origin story was, in that, truthfully, as a scientist, his wife was dying of a disease that he couldn't cure. So he comes up with a way to try to cryogenically freeze her so that he can figure out how to save her. His love for his wife is just unending. And then as a result, falls into a path of crime. But then constantly throughout this storyline, and it's revisited in Batman the Animated Series, in a lot of the different comics, is this fact that Victor, at the end of the day, does remember who he was and why he's doing what he's doing. And
he's
that's why
the least villainous villains, you know, which is another reason why I can't stand, Arnold's partake of it. I can't get down with anything from those movies. But, it's Freeze being a scapegoat in this was unfortunate. But it just really leads to the point of moving on in the capacity that Freeze was just an unlucky target, but the real meat of the story, you know, Freeze, you barely even see Batman exist in any of these three issues. It's the simple fact that Bruce is dealing with his aftermath of his own actions. And jumping right out the gate in the beginning of the issue, it's one of those things where, you know, I'm flipping through these things. I get excited. Point of interest, you know, and with between me and Chris runs a physical comic book shop, and I am selfish and live far from a comic book shop. So quite often I buy my comics digitally, and which I know makes me a traitor and a sinner above all ranks. But
it's OK. You know, I forgive you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So personally for me, like, I literally wait until Tuesday at midnight and I'm excited to pick up my comics like while everyone else is sleeping. And so, you know, it's one of those things I'm waiting to go to bed. And like on the second page, or no, literally on the first page of the book, Bruce Wayne starts asking another juror if she's wearing a cross. And I'm like, go on. And, you know, it just goes into this discussion of her asking, or they have this dialogue where she said that, she, you know, that she believes in God, and that she says, is this a problem? And Bruce says, never. And it's, you know, I just remember sitting in that chair and like, oh boy, Tom King's about to talk about faith. I'm excited.
We're going to take a pause right there on this LTN Rewind from our first ever episode of the Pull List from October of 2018. Chris and Hector will be back in just a little bit to continue their discussion on Tom King's Batman and his supposed atheism. Stick around.
Did you sleep here?
Only for a few hours. Guess where Rich is from.
Couldn't have been Crazy Town. You'd have gone to high school together.
Santa Fe, New Mexico. Nobody gets out of Santa Fe without learning how to make a pot. 45% Hispanic, fifth highest Native American population. They eat and breathe clay there.
I think some of this research may have been done on Wikipedia.
You're mocking me? You. No. Fine. Go ahead. Mock me.
Oh, Jeff. You're gold blooming.
Gold blooming? I don't know what that means. So, look, I have work to do before class because I want to catch Rich when he slips up.
In episode 19 of season 1 of Community, we see Jeff, Winger, Annie, and Abed join the ultimate blow-off class, beginner pottery. You don't even have to make a good pot. People pass it in the hallway and get a contact credit. Of course, what Jeff didn't expect was to be in that class with somebody who seemed naturally talented. Jeff Winger's always been the most talented one in the room, and now he's finding himself bested. And more than that, Jeff is terrible at pottery. He's never been terrible at anything that he can remember, and in fact, he's been reinforced with the idea that he's probably one of the best people, just, you know, ever. A lot of us are like that. We have a very successful life. We're good at a lot of things. Sometimes we're naturally gifted in a lot of areas, and then we find something that we're terrible at. And we usually find that out when we try it next to somebody who actually knows what they're doing and just realize how far behind we really are. And in situations like that, admit it, that's when your green-eyed monster comes out, because you think
it was supposed to be you.
Jeff became obsessed with proving that Rich, the doctor, who was naturally gifted, wasn't naturally gifted, that he was an expert already. And you know what? We find out at the very end that he was right. But that doesn't matter. The lesson here is not about what Rich could do. It's about what Jeff could do. If he's bad at pottery, what does that really matter? In 1 Corinthians 12, verses 14 and then 16 through 18, the Bible says this: "For the body of Christ does not consist of one member, but of many. And if the ear should say, 'Because I'm not an eye, I do not belong to the body,' that would not make it any less a part of the body. If the whole body were an eye, where would be the sense of hearing? If the whole body were an ear, where would be the sense of smell? As it is, God arranged the members in the body, each one of them, as he chose." God blesses us all with different gifts, different talents, different ministry focuses. Just because we all can't do the same thing doesn't mean we aren't important. In fact, it means we are vital to keeping the whole body of Christ properly working. So even if your mother fudged a bit when she said you're one of the most special kids on the planet, just remember this healthier truth.
You're going to be great at a few things, but really crappy at many more. And that takes a lot of the pressure off.
Catch a new Back Row Binge Watch every Monday on the Back Row Morning Show, exclusively on LTN Radio. What up, nerd? We hope you're enjoying the podcast. But did you know that Love Thy Nerd showcases most of their content on LTN Radio first? That's right. Check the schedule and listen to most of our shows before they're available here over at ltnonair.com. And while you're streaming, you'll also hear the best mix of Christian rock, rap, pop, and indie, and even some content made exclusively for our radio listeners. Stream directly from ltnonair.com or download the Live 365 app and favorite LTN Radio. And let us become your new daily soundtrack. You'll be glad you did. Welcome back to LTN Rewind. We're reliving the classic episode of the Pull List podcast from October of 2018. It's actually the very first Pull List podcast where Hector and Chris are discussing Batman number 53, written by Tom King, where Batman apparently expresses his spiritual beliefs and actually caused a bit of a stir at the time, and now they're examining it themselves. Let's pick up where we left off just a bit ago.
Literally on the first page of the book, Bruce Wayne starts asking another juror if she's wearing a cross. And I'm like, go on. And, you know, it just goes into this discussion of her asking, or they have this dialogue where she said that, she, you know, that she believes in God, and that she says, is this a problem? And Bruce says, never. And it's, you know, I just remember sitting in that chair and like, oh boy, Tom King's about to talk about faith. I'm excited. Right? However this turns out, I'm excited because, you know, I've all of my interactions and things that I've seen with Tom King, even if it's not his personal story, he is a masterful storyteller in what he's doing and the points he's getting across. So I remember literally by the second or third page, I was super hyped to finish this, because just for me, being my heart about these things and the stories that are told, it's a big deal. So like, what were your impressions just going into it before? Because you read it before the hype really hit.
Right. No, I was certainly shocked that it was at least billed that was going to be the end of this story. And it was like, okay, well, this needs to get somewhere. We've literally been sequestered with this jury now basically for three issues. And he leads off with that question of, hey, is that a cross that I see? And the woman's like, why, yes, do you take issue with that? And he's like, no, not really. And then Bruce goes down the story of telling basically his growing up that, yes, his parents were devoutly Catholic and that they attended church and
not Catholic
with them. It wasn't. Oh, wait, no, that's right. Episcopalian.
The quote is, my father was a Christian. He held hallowed the immortal soul, heaven, the Father and the Son, giving your will to the Lord, trusting him with that will. They wanted me to believe that too, but he wanted me to come into it on my own. We went to church. He told me all the stories. We talked a lot about what we can and can't control. And, you know, I just think it was such a neat entrance because of all the, you hear stories of Thomas Wayne sure. all the time, and you hear references to them and their faith. But the fact that you literally see that Thomas Wayne and Martha intentionally were trying to raise Bruce up to be a person of faith. I was like, oh, well, look at that. You know, even I love the aspect as a parent, just saying that he wanted me to come to it in his own terms. Being a pastor, right. I've been a missionary, I've been all down these professional roads of faith. One of the things that I've always been afraid of is pushing faith onto my kids, because I have three daughters and I don't want them to ever feel like you have to roll with what I believe because dad believes it. And to try and let them come into that on their own. So I just thought that was a really nice touch. And but on a flashback, though, there's a few issues back where Booster Gold changes history by letting Thomas and Martha live. And at that point, Bruce is very active in his faith, you know, in this alternate future. And so, you know, I thought that was neat that it really did show that if it hadn't been for this tragedy in his life, because the next few pages of the issue really do break down that it was the simple fact that he couldn't believe in something like God or faith, but dealing with what he was dealing with what that hole he left him. You know, the quote says, "I put aside believing in a deity or believing anything my father thought and saved him. I couldn't really see anything that saved him." And, you know, it was just that deal that he couldn't put his faith in the God that let his parents die.
Right. And I think that's what actually spoke the most to me, personally, is that this is a story that a lot of us can relate to, whether it's someone that has found their way into faith or found their way out of faith, that this is a story that a lot of us have heard, is that we grew up in our parents' faith. They didn't really force it on us. And then some type of event occurs in their life that those paths diverge. And in this case, it was the horrific robbery and ultimately murder of both of his parents before him that pushed him in that way. And his natural response is anger. And I get that. I can understand that. I know personally, when I lost my father, I had actually just recently become a Christian, and I was mad as hell. And it's just raw emotions of losing someone close to you in such a violent way is something that's going to alter how you look at life in general. But I think what was most fascinating in this story is that Bruce doesn't talk just about the fact that he used anger as a reason to separate himself from that part of the story, that it also became that path of becoming the Batman and putting so much into that existence and persona, that what Tom King does in this story is we start seeing Bruce tell this story of, we're going to convict Mr. Freeze because the Batman said so, right? How many people here have been saved by Batman or think, you know, he's the greatest thing that Gotham could ever do? And, you know, every single one of them raised their hands, right? And he's like, but the Batman's isn't infallible, right? And
yeah,
that part was really where I started finding interesting was, oh, I see what's happening. And I started getting exciting because you could kind of start seeing where the end of the story was going to be was, yeah. Bruce was literally having out in front of a bunch of people that had no idea what's going on, that he had come to this point of worshiping Batman just as much as the people around him.
Well, and it wasn't even just about the people's response. He right. had created Batman to be his own personal God.
Right.
You know, he said that I searched for something solid to put my faith in. I asked a great deal of questions and paid for some answers, but I didn't find anything out there as far as I went. So I came home and waited for something to find me. And, you know, and it's that classic scene of the bat coming in, breaking through the window, finding him. So he literally turned Batman into his God. And he goes on to say, you know, he literally verbatim says, I thought he was God, saying that Batman, right. he thought he was God. And that's just crazy to, you know, literally hear him say that out loud. And this was one of those issues, just one of those moments, just like with the book Judas. Literally every page as I'm turning, I'm waiting with bated breath to see, is this going to end positively or is this going to be like the most negative Jesus Rickroll of all time? And, you right. know, literally. There's one page where Bruce says God is above us and he wears a cape. And I, you know, like, oh no, don't do it. But then literally the next panel is, so that's what I thought. And, you know, I was just like, man, go on. I think this was, I'm part of a discussion group at my local comic book shop. And there's a guy I don't really agree with his thoughts or opinions on anything in life. But, you know, he goes on to say these were the most boring waste of issues he's ever paid money for. And I'm like, bro.
Oh, wow.
Do you even read these things? Because this was some of the most beautiful storytelling. And let me just pause and say, Lee Week's artwork is flipping phenomenal.
Whole story has just been pieced together and visually amazing and narratively.
A year ago, I didn't know who Lee Weeks was. And mm-hmm. even though he's a classic comic book artist, and one of my friends was at a comic book con and said, "Hey, did you know that guy over there is a Christian?" and was talking about Lee Weeks. So I went and got a print from him. I gave him a copy of one of the Faith and Fandom books. And then literally a year later, this dude's doing one of the best Batman issues I've ever read. So it's just crazy.
And I think that's what's great about the medium. And I mean, for this particular issue, obviously, we're very much talking about the faith and overlap of the two issues. And that's what's so amazing about comics in general, is that the creators, both the artists, the writers, and everyone involved, there's lots of people involved in getting a story to a page. And these are people too. They all have their upbringings, their backgrounds, and the things that make them who they are. And then they have the constraints of their characters and editorial that ensures that, you know, the continuity of the universe stays together, unless they're literally out to do something crazy, which does happen.
It does.
But what's been great about this story is it gives us this a very typical story. I'm sure a lot of people have had this or heard this faith story in some way, fashion, shape, or form. And what's fascinating to me is when I've talked to some people about this particular story arc, they're like, right, he's an atheist. And it's like, did you read the whole story, or did you just stop when, because there's one panel towards the beginning where he's like, well, I used to have faith. And then he tells the rest of the story we've been talking about. And people are like, right there, he said he was an atheist. And it's like, but then no. He very quickly steps back to explaining that what happened in the absence of that in his life was he filled that void with something, and that something was Batman. And what he was starting to unpack was that might have blinded him to a lot of different things. And, you know, I think the most fascinating part about this is culture in general jumped on and said, Batman's an atheist, done deal, we're good here.
Had like a eye roll, stomach churn when I saw Jessica Chobo saying, Batman's an atheist. And I'm like, come on now.
Right. And a bunch of us sat and went, well, we don't know yet. The story could still go somewhere. We don't know. But then a few days ago, after almost a week of these stories propagating, Tom King himself on Twitter puts up the last panel of the book, because the other thing that everyone was so excited about was the story wraps up and Batman says, Alfred, get the old suit out. And back to Batman wears, right, he's wearing the trunks on the outside. If you don't know what we're talking about, it's really important to comics that Batman and Superman, the briefs are on the outside. Look it up. But you'll see what we're talking about. Right? Yeah. It's like, we don't know why they wear their underpants on the outside.
I wear my underwear on the outside. I get arrested.
Right. Right. It's a style choice, and it works for DC. Trust us. But he told that entire story and he said, I got to get back to roots. So get the suit out. And then at the very bottom of the page is a quotation out of Job 1. And he had been telling the story from Job during the entire section of explaining his faith.
Let me just hit that because I got to say, like, I don't expect to be theologically challenged or encouraged when I'm reading a Batman comic. I might look for like, oh, look, that's cute, but I don't look for a theological challenge. But there's this one moment like in the book when he's still explaining himself to the jury before, you know, we get to the Tom conclusion. He says, and it's almost this sarcastic tone of he's the world's greatest detective. And he just turns and looks at the jury and says, who are you? And then he walks to them and says, you ever read the book of Job? That's what God said to him, right? God tore his guy's life away. He burned his family and his children, or his farm and his children. And Job gets a little angry and asks God why. And God says, I created the mountains and the miracles, and you're questioning me? You? Who are you? And then he breaks down in tears at the table. Who are you? And, you know, he's not talking to the jury at that point. He's literally talking to himself, you know, that, and then even going on that, he says, I fell, everything falls. He said, I screamed as loud as I could. I screamed, and my scream was a prayer to him, to the mask and to the symbol and to the rope and the fist. I begged for him to catch me. Tears in my eyes. I fell and I begged and I waited. Please, 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 Batman, help me. And it's, you know, that he literally prayed this prayer to Batman to save him from the pain that he was dealing with. I'm just like, this is a guy seeing that his false security, his false idol, his false sense of self wasn't going to save him. And, you know, I think my favorite one square panel of anything is that he says he's not God. He's not. He tries, he does, I know, and he fails time and time again, but he can't. He does not. And this was my favorite thing. And then when I started hearing people talk about the atheist angle, and I'm like, did you read this? Because, like, he says this in present context. He says he does not provide solace from pain. He cannot give you hope for the eternal. He cannot comfort you for the love you lost. And he's referring to Batman. Then he goes on to say, God blesses your soul with grace. Batman punches people in the face. And my only regret is I wish that didn't rhyme.
Right.
Because I'm waiting for that to be like a hook and a trap song in the future.
Except that's the beauty of comics is that more than likely that was, he rhymed that on purpose.
Oh yeah. I know he rhymed that on
purpose. That's very Batman in terms of that context. But I mean, that's what's kind of wild though, right? Is we're sitting here talking about comics. Yes, we're people of faith and everything, but we're not 100% sure on Tom King's position as a writer. We have an idea of where Lee Weeks comes from. But this is a mainline, one of the best-selling comics that comes out every week. And
it's the best Batman run of probably my adult life altogether.
Right. We're having this discussion right here. And so all these different fact patterns are falling on the table, and all the stories are Batman's an atheist. We finally know for sure. And then Tom King, a week after the book comes out, literally just posts the picture from the end of that issue and says, I'm not saying, but I am saying I wrote it, and that's not how I read that.
Yeah, he said, but a lot of people saying Batman 53, which I wrote, shows Batman is an atheist. That's not how I read that comic, but I don't think my reading of it is the most important one. Anyway, I hope you read the whole thing for yourself and decide for yourself.
Right. And that was, I mean, that's when some of us got together and went, oh, we have to talk about this.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, with so much else going on in comics in general and so many wild things, there's very few issues where we actually overlap issues of trauma from early in someone's life, what their life looked like before and after a traumatic incident. And then for Bruce, he just went through another emotional, like, part of the reality of Batman is this entire concept of he's trying to fight for justice, but as a vigilante, simply because of that traumatic loss of that huge gap being ripped out of his life of losing his parents, that finally getting to the point literally decades later where he might fall in love with someone, actually trust someone again, and then that whole thing falls through, that it seems clear that Tom King was setting up this situation to be, you know, the next difficult reality for Bruce Wayne. And then we literally see him working it out in public through the venue of this trial. That it's just such a wild piece of comics, but at the same time, it's also so comics. And I think that's what I love about this, is that comic book writers and creators forever and ever have found all these really awesome ways to tell stories, or what seem like over the top stories. And technically all the pieces of this one really is over the top. But then Tom brings us all the way back into just this little room of 12 people. And we get almost Batman, Bruce Wayne's entire faith story almost in a full circle. And to me, that's been amazing. And it's great because it opens up all kinds of conversations. And just as Tom King said himself, it's like he basically was saying, let's have the conversation. He's like, I know that I wrote it and that I read it a particular way, but the beauty of comics is, let's have the discussion. Let's talk about what you took away from this particular thing. And if anything, I think that's
one of the most powerful parts is, like, you can read this and I get it. Like, I think some people just jumped on the atheist thing because it was convenient and it was sensationalist and people were getting that out there. I think it was obviously the atheist thing was a big push for selling, you know, clicks. But beyond that, I understand how someone could read this and take it both ways. But I know, you know, it's one of those things that I think you mentioned in just talking to me that, you know, the Christians that read this felt venerated. The atheists that read this felt venerated. That they had actually come across something that kind of just spoke to them, you know. And to me, though, like coming across to the last issue or to the last page of a mainstream Batman comic and the end of the issue being a full panel of quoted scripture that literally ends in "Blessed be the name of the Lord," I'm like, you can't do anything better than me. You know, that's, you know, as a nerdy Christian, that's about as good as it gets. And, you know, I've had a lot of friends that have picked up this issue just because of the commentary on it. And so I think that is a great thing. You know, people picked up the wedding issue because, and I don't want to knock anyone for picking up the wedding issue, because I know especially right. your store had a big factor in that. But people pick up the wedding issue because it's sensationalist, because it's a moment in time. It's, you know, I think people have done the climax issues ever since Superman died. Yep. To me, in my memory, when you think a big life change is happening, you pick that up. Well, yep. You know, I personally ran out to buy the engagement issue for that reason. Like, I heard, I was in Tennessee speaking at a kids camp, and I, you know, rather than picking up on my Kindle, I'm like, oh no, Batman's getting engaged, I better go buy this. Well, I know there are a lot of people that picked it up, but there are people picking up this issue not because it's a sensationalist moment in the history, but there are people picking this up because there's an honest discussion and breakdown of faith coming from literally one of the most iconic characters in all of pop culture. And that's powerful. So here's the deal. I don't need Batman to believe in Jesus. I don't mm-hmm. need that. It doesn't change me loving Batman. I don't think it necessarily, you know, if you had Batman being an avid Christian or something, I'd be like, that might be a stretch. But I don't need Batman to justify my faith. But the fact that he can spark a conversation about things like this, I think that's fantastic.
No, and I think that's exactly why we wanted to talk about it here today. And I think that's a great segue point to also just give people a rundown of what we're looking to do when we get together to be able to provide this hopefully wonderful podcast to the folks at Love Thy Nerd, is to have that honest discussion. Is that, yes, we come from a faith background, but one of the things that we absolutely enjoy about our being nerdy and being comic book geeks is that comic books have just become, well, they have been this wonderful medium that provides artistic abilities from people that can draw well, art, color, and also people that write stories, to come together as creative teams of people to be able to bring a product to market that isn't just sensationalist. There's plenty of those stories, but what's really been hitting well in the market for the last couple of years and kind of revitalizing comic books in general is these really deep hitting stories that are overlapping characters that a lot of us know and love, but giving us the personal angles that haven't quite been entirely fleshed out on the pages. And that's just what makes being able to be engaged in it so enjoyable, and why I enjoy what I do on a day-to-day basis, because the comic book store is where people come in to have these conversations, that a lot of these books don't just get read and we leave them on the table, that people want to talk about the experience that they just had, or did someone share what I took from this particular story? And we think that's what's been happening in culture, is that they read this story and went, right, he's an atheist. We finally know. And he's just shed everything around us. And people of faith read the same book and went, no, he's about to return to his faith because that's the place that he's grounded. But this is the conversation that gets to be had in the public space. And that's what we hope to do, is that we want to be able to absorb a lot of the cool stuff that's out there, be able to talk to some of these cool creators. We hope to do some interviews and bring them in so we can get what they were thinking when they were doing it. You know, all of us can sit here and assume what some of these folks do, but it's even better to bring some of these creatives in and be able to have that discussion. So that's kind of a quick hit of what you can look forward to on this particular podcast. But yeah, so what final thoughts do you have for us, Hector?
Well, I really do. I think this, I think it's a great place to be able to have these discussions. And, you know, this is the thing. Batman 53 is a rare commodity. You're not going to find mainstream comics that this avidly look for faith content. And you're also, you know, and that's one of the things that we're not going to do. We're not going to try to shoehorn Jesus speak into everything. But yep, it doesn't have to be a story about God or Jesus to, like, actually spark those conversations. But, you know, like, even Batman 50, the wedding issue this past weekend, I was at a Charlotte Comic Con in Charlotte, North Carolina. And we have a friend that's professional in the business who works for Sonic. He works on Sonic the Hedgehog. He's worked for DC. Yep. He's worked for Marvel, Iron Man, some different things like that. And, you know, this is a comic book artist that lost his wife at a young mm-hmm. age. And he said, you know, that he couldn't put the issue down of issue 50 because it was literally helping him process how he lost his wife.
Sure.
And so there's literally, we're standing in the hallway of a Comic-Con, hundreds of people walking around us, other artists, other creators. And I'm talking with a guy whose comic books have helped him process how he dealt with the loss of his wife. And then he told me straight up, I'm scared to read this issue because it dealt a lot more with the Book of Job. And, you know, he knew that it was going to apply to his life. He's like, I can't read this issue here because it's going to wreck me. So it's the only thing. Comics can be such a powerful medium, and the content and the heart of them, I think, are something that just translates into our everyday life.
That's what you guys can look forward to here on the Pull List, that we'll be able to pull apart some of the bigger issues, some of the cooler things that we've seen. We'll even talk about some of the absolutely crazy things that occur in comics, because there's plenty of them. Just this week happened to be one of those cool topics where we get to talk about something, just as Hector said, we don't get to talk a lot about typically inside comics. So stay with us. Hit subscribe and see if this is something you guys are really into. We're just glad for the opportunity to be here to partner up with Love Thy Nerd and be part of the podcasting network. And, you know, just like we've said, comics are really cool. And we're not just saying that for the fun of it, that if it can literally bring somebody to the point of having to deal with some of the things that they've experienced in their life, to you just read to be able to get that escape and read something absolutely crazy, or you are reading it because of the social commentary or the cultural commentary, comics are where it's at. And just remember, no matter what, we're here. We love all you guys, and read more comics.
You've been listening to the Pull List Podcast with Chris Poirier and Hector Mirai, part of the Love Thy Nerd Podcast Network. Be sure to rate and review the show and share on all the social media.
I'm gonna take all seven continents of the Game of Risk. The master of epic duels. I can feel your anger. It gives you focus.
That's going to do it for our LTN Rewind for this week. We got another one coming up next week. And where are we going to go? We don't know. What show? But it's always a fun time to relive some of the best memories and moments from LTN's history. Hey, you know what? Have a fantastic week, everybody. We'll see you again real soon. Jesus loves you, nerd.